Catch of this. Everybody, let Jared have your attention here. He's getting ready to come up here and do step 12.
Look at that. That's some enthusiasm. Especially after lunch. I'm sure everybody is kind of like, you know. But guess what? We're almost there. You can smell the barn. Right? That's a Texas phrase. Everybody's like, what does that mean? I'll explain whenever we have personal time later on. All right. So, first of all, I just want to thank you, everybody, for being here. Everybody's been so hospitable, so kind. We appreciate the kind words. Whether it's conversations out at the smoke pit, after, you know, we get off the stage, or passing back and forth in the bathroom, whatever it might be, everybody's just been really, really cool. And it's always an honor and a privilege to get here to just meet like-minded people, you know what I mean? And to expand our connection with God and his kids and stuff like that, and knowing, hey, I got some brothers and sisters in Charlotte who I can pass anybody along to at any point in time. And that's a really, really cool deal. So we're going to get into step 12. And so the way that John and I were kind of discussing, or, you know, obviously we're going to let God take care of most of it, all of it. Like I said, God's going to take care of the whole thing. But, you know, we do have to come in with some sort of a plan, because we don't want to, you know, be willy-nilly about the whole thing and then, you know what I mean, forget stuff or not talk about the most important things. We'll kind of break this little 12-step session into a couple of parts. I'll handle my piece. John will handle his. Before I even get to that, though, a little bit of extra stuff on the 10th step. If you see on page 84, there's one key line in this entire piece. Matter of fact, we'll just go to it right now. That sounded like a desire chip. A chip, not a desire chip. They don't fall differently. Coming from somebody who picked up a gazillion desire chips, they weren't even clapping anymore whenever I would pick them up. They were just like, you know, I think he's already drunk. How did he get drunk from the chair on the way to the podium? So the one important key factor that I want everybody to understand is that as we're approaching step 10, it says we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. And as John said, the moment I start my amends, I'm in 10, 11, and 12 for the rest of my life, right? One key factor is the sentence that follows that. It says, we have entered the world of the Spirit. So, oftentimes you may hear in contemporary AA, oh, well, the 10th step is just doing 4 through 9 over and over again. That may be true to some extent. But think about it this way. The time that I do my first inventory, I do a first 4 and a first 5 and a 6 and 7, I'm not awake to those things. I don't know what my character defects are, but they become glaring as I approach 6 and 7, right? I'm asleep to all of these things. But now that I've entered the world in the Spirit, guess what? I've woken up. I'm awake, right? As Anthony DeMello says, if anybody's ever read that that one passage, a lot of people go through life spiritually asleep, dreaming they're awake. They go to work asleep. They have kids asleep. They participate in life asleep. And not many people get the opportunity to wake up, right? Now I have the opportunity to be awake, and I'm awake to what these things look like, right? So when they crop up, guess what? I see it at once. Dude, that's me being selfish. Man, that's me being dishonest. My conscience is actually a functional conscience now. Man, I shouldn't have said that to her. You know what I mean? I shouldn't have done that. And dude, 9 times out of 10, my 10 steps look like me calling and telling on myself. Because that's exactly what it is. Man, I stepped in it again. And you know what my sponsor will say? I guess they're not doing it your way, are they? No, because that's pretty much what it is. I get upset because they're not doing it my way. You know what I mean? But another important key factor in this 10th step is that This can happen at any point in time throughout the day. And what we have to understand is that it's so important to tackle it when it crops up. Okay? If you think about it this way, 8 in the morning, I'm getting ready, we're getting the kids ready to get off to school. My wife and I have some choice words on what we're packing my son for lunch. Okay? May be something, you know, just, you know, willy-nilly off the cuff, but you know what? It's probably something that I shouldn't have said. If I don't do anything with it, I recognize it, but I don't do anything with it, I don't go through the processes outlined in the book, then I'm blocked off. I'm blocked off from her. I'm blocked off from my kids. I'm blocked off from the rest of God's kids for the rest of the day. So this is why we shouldn't confuse 10 with 11. Because if I do that at 8 in the morning and I wait all the way until the evening to nightly inventory to tackle that stuff, guess what? I'm walking all around town spiritually asleep, disconnected from you and from God. And the 10th step is designed to turn me around, to redirect me and get me out of self and get me back in connection with God, back into connection with his kids. So guess what? 8:05 in the morning, I say a prayer. God, you know what? I shouldn't have said that to her. Please forgive me. Direct my thoughts to how I can be helpful. Then I'm going to call up JK, my sponsor, and I'm going to say, dude, stepped in it again. All right, guess they're not doing it your way, huh? Right? And I'm going to explain a couple of things. We do a 10th step. It's 3 minutes, 5 minutes, right? It's not some lengthy, drawn-out process, okay? I'm going to get to the truth really quick because his time is valuable. My time is valuable, right? You often hear people talking about always writing inventory, constantly writing inventory, right? Always writing, 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 right? If writing was that important, they would have put writing into writing, right? In one of the books, right? In one of the chapters, okay? Me constantly writing is me constantly writing, right? It's not me getting back into the stream of life. The essence of the steps are designed to get me back into the stream of life so I can start contributing. But when I'm always writing, what am I doing? I'm always writing. I'm not in life with you. I'm not next to you. I'm not on the firing line with you. I'm into writing. And I'm worshiping that mechanic, right? That mechanic comes important. Guess what? I have a new God. And that leads us to the important part of step 11, right? Sometimes we may get so wrapped up in mechanics that I begin to worship the mechanics. I may get so wrapped up in the book that I begin to worship the book instead of worshiping God. Sometimes we may experience one of the many pitfalls that happen throughout the work, and that's spiritual pride. I make some amends. I get the blowtorch back away from my ass for a little bit, right? Things are looking good. I'm back in the big bed. Maybe I got a few sponsees and stuff like that. And what happens? You know what? I don't need to go to that H&I thing tonight. You know, I'm feeling a little tired. Those guys will handle it. You know what I mean? I slowly start to back away, right? As quickly as I work through the steps, I can work backwards through the steps. And it's no longer an 11-step problem or a 10-step problem or a 12-step problem. It's a step one problem. My desperation has gone, right? The catalyst is gone. It's been removed, right? And now I'm back in charge. Oftentimes, people will start to practice other things. This is why the book says, you know, we do these things alongside of, not instead of. Because the minute I start replacing this stuff, I'm replacing the thing that gave me the very connection to God that I've been so desiring. And when I start to worship other things, hot yoga, you know what I mean? Or just a small example, you know what I mean? How do you, worshiping hot yoga sounds funny, but you know what I mean? I start to worship these other methodologies, right? And I begin to focus my attention more on that. But we do it with a ton of other things, right? How much money do I need? Just enough not to need God. How much relationship do I need? Just enough not to need God. How much sex do I need? Just enough not to need God. And I start to worship all of these other things, and slowly and surely they begin to replace God, the one true God, the reason why we're here, right? It begins to replace the most important relationship I'll ever have in my entire life, because that's ultimately what this 11th step is about, growing, cultivating this relationship. People call them the maintenance steps, right? No, the growth steps, right? If I'm maintaining right? If my car's breaking down, the bumper falls off, and I just want to maintain, I'm just putting duct tape on it till I can make it down the block, right? It's not growing. I'm not trying to improve it at all, right? Duct tape is not aesthetically pleasing. What I'm trying to do is I need to try to grow. I need to improve. And that's exactly what we need to do with this relationship, because again, it's the most important relationship I'll ever have in my entire life. More important than the relationship I have with my buddies. More important than the relationship I have with my kids. Right? More important than the relationship that I have with you guys, because without this relationship, I will have no other relationships. I will burn it down, plain and simple. And so the relationship with God has to come first. Everybody says, oh, well, sobriety's got to come first. God comes first. Sobriety, next. Because God brings that about. My connection through God brings about sobriety. Right? Conscious contact with God brings that about. And I have to continue to work towards those things. That's what page 63 was talking about. Right? The most important sentence that I'll ever tell you guys to highlight or underline in the entire book. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. If, a conditional if, meaning I have to meet that condition in order for it to happen, if we stay close to him and perform his work well. My sponsor said, underline it, highlight it, live it, learn it. That's your job description until the day you die. Anything else ain't my job. What these people are saying over here, whether when we're in lockdown, not in lockdown, COVID, no COVID, in and out of, it doesn't matter, right? Anything else is between them and God. My job is to do my job today. Stay close to God through prayer and meditation. Perform his work well through work and self-sacrifice for other people. That is my job. That's chopping wood. That's carrying water. Doing the things necessary to show God that I'm willing to go to any length not to pick up a drink today. And that means the disciplines of 10 and 11 and 12, right? Somehow, somewhere, people begin to think that 10, 11, and 12 is somehow optional or extra credit, especially carrying the message. You know what I mean? What we have to understand as we move into 12, let's just go to it. Here we go. Chapter 7, going to meetings. Oh. No, it says working with others. Okay, right on. I thought I said that. What does it say? Practical experience shows us that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. All right. Some people who may be slightly older than me, who's got a smallpox vaccine? Raise your hand. Who's got a, what's the other one? Polio. Who's got the polio vaccine? Right. So can polio touch you? Can smallpox touch you? Why not? Immunity, right? If I want immunity from drinking, where booze cannot touch me anymore, what do I need to do? Intensive work with other alcoholics. That means getting off my lazy butt, going out and finding people suffering just like me. Doesn't mean going to a meeting, sitting around and waiting. That's me going to a meeting, sitting down and waiting, right? That means I go out. I go out and I carry this message, right? Dr. Bob said, carry this message, and if you must, use words. What does that mean? That means that the way that I carry myself, my whole deportment shouts that I'm a man with an answer, that I'm free. A lot of us, especially if you've been to treatment and you have people come in and talk to you in treatment, you can spot BS from a mile away. Am I right? Can't forgive my language, can't bullshit a bullshitter. You can spot it. But you can also spot somebody who's got the fire in their eyes, right? You see that. It's tangible, it's real, right? I want it. I want what that guy has, right? And that's what we have to carry. The fact that we have freedom, not relief. Relief is temporary. We're talking about permanent, right? Freedom. Back in the forward of the second edition. You don't have to thumb back there. I'll just go ahead and read it. I'll do this for free. Don't worry. Let's see. Page... A couple of pages prior to XX, I think. Sorry. Mine's numbered differently, so... it says, in two parts. On one page it says, he suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry this message to another alcoholic. Right? Talking about Bill Wilson before he met Dr. Bob. Right? When he's in the Mayflower Hotel, knowing what he needed to do. He didn't want to drink. He knew that he was going to unless he did something about it. Right? And that's what he ended up doing. Moving on, it says, it also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to what kind of recovery? Permanent. You don't suppose that he meant permanent, do you? Maybe they really just meant one day at a time, right? As you can tell, I'm not a fan of that phrase, right? One day at a time. No, we're talking about permanent recovery. We're playing for keeps, right? God is everything or he is nothing. And if you don't believe that, find a new God. Right? Because this is where we start to get really serious. Really serious. We can have fun about a lot of this. We can laugh, you know what I mean? And, you know, we can cut up about a lot of it, but now we're talking about life and death. Now we're talking about what I can do. Now we talk about my responsibility, my obligations, right? What I need to do day in and day out, and that's be there prepared for the newcomer. You know what I mean? Not waiting for them to come to me, but for me to go out. That happens in a little picture, and that happens in a big picture, right? If I am sitting in a meeting, right? See some dude walking in, you know what I mean? He's just kind of brand new, he's looking around. Or better yet, maybe he made it in before you. Always spot a newcomer. He's the guy who's there before everybody, and he's sitting there and he's reading the book. Just reading the book, right? Everybody else is cutting up, talking about their golf game and, you know, blah, 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 just doing whatever, drinking coffee, pouring coffee, you know what I mean? Talking about the last roundup and all that stuff, and this dude's sitting here and reading the book. That's how you can really spot a newcomer most of the time at the meetings. Nestle up to that guy. Get out of yourself, go up and sit next to that guy. Hey, dude, pretty cool book, huh? You know, check it out. Here's one of my favorite parts right in here. You know what I mean? Now I'm making a friend, right? Now he's not alone. Now he knows that there's at least one knucklehead there who's willing to get out of himself to come talk to him. You know what I mean? Or woman. Doesn't really matter. Men and women, it doesn't matter, right? Bigger picture. What am I doing to go out to carry this message? Our group, stemmed from the primary purpose group. So that primary purpose group, Dallas, was our home group at a certain point in time, and then COVID came about. Everybody's under lockdown, you know, meetings are shut down and stuff like that, but we still wanted fellowship. So we decided to form the Gorilla Pop-Up AA meeting, right? It's a long title, huh? And what we did is we got lawn chairs, get yourself a cup of tea, bring your 12 and 12 and bring your book, and guess what? We're gonna sit in the park, we're gonna study the book. And that's what we did during COVID, you know what I mean? Social distanced. But we were in there and we were studying the book. It's the coolest thing in the world to see, like, you know, 40 people in a park. You probably drive by and you're like, what are those people doing over there? It got cold. It got dark. So we needed a place to go, right? And probably a little bit more history than you probably need to know, but either way, we found a church that we can go to. A buddy of ours had a connection. So we sat down with the pastor and the pastor's like, you know, this is a really cool thing that you guys are doing. We're really glad that you're here. You could help the congregation. You could help other people who are in the area, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's like a pre-business meeting or that kind of thing. We're asking him, you know, what can we do to pay rent? How much rent do we owe and what do we do? And he looked at us and he goes, this ain't my house. This is God's house. You guys don't need to pay rent. We're like, okay, well, but still, you know what I mean? We understand that, you know, we may use resources, you got bills to pay, that kind of thing, and it's like, what can we do to pay you back? And he goes, you know what? Just make a difference. Just make a difference. And at the time, we had been hunting for a name for our group. Thus became the Make a Difference group, right? And that's what we do. He asked us, that's how we can pay, you know, pay the church back, whatever. So now that's what we do. And in our group, just like we did back in the primary purpose group, we only meet. Our group meets one night a week. You cannot do 90 and 90 at our group. Okay? One night a week, just like old school AA, right? Just like real AA, one night a week. Every other night of the week, you're expected to go out and carry the message, right? Some people call it H and I's. We call it carrying the message, right? hospitals, institutions, detoxes, halfway houses, living sober, sober living, you know, places, that kind of thing. We have about 30 commitments. There's about 40 people in our group. Right? But that's what we're expected to do. That's what the group is designed to do, is to be, is to study the book, to be better students and practitioners of the program so that we can go out there and do what we do best. And that's help drunks, right? Think about it this way. A lot of people may be thinking, well, Jared's knocking the meetings. Jared just doesn't like meetings. That's not it at all, okay? I love meetings. Meetings are righteous, right? They're cool places that we can go. We have fellowship. Meetings will not keep me sober, right? How many meetings do you need to go to have a spiritual experience? How many PTA meetings do you need to go to be a parent? None, right? Where do I get that spiritual experience? By going through the work and by giving away what was so freely given to me. I have to give it away to get it. I have to give it away to keep it, right? And that's why they devoted an entire chapter to this, right? Because of the absolute importance in doing it. If we look at the table of contents and see how they've even broken down this entire thing, page, you know, title page all the way up to page 23 talks about the physical piece. 23 to 43 talks about the mental piece. Chapter 4, step 2. Chapter 5, right, goes into 3 and 4, into action, covers a whole lot of stuff. Right? Even think about it this way, right? From where John left off, let's start at page 63 and let's go to page 84. And I want everybody to hold those pages right there. Okay? 63 to page 84. Any math majors in there? Who can tell me how many pages that is? 19. Oh, 19 pages. So from page 63, I go from broke, homeless, unemployed, unemployable, gutter level drunk, always passing out in Walmart parking lots, getting a tan on half my body, to we are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed, recovered, right? 19 pages from gutter level to the power. Right? Tell your sponsees that. Is your life worth doing 19 pages worth of work? How long does it take you to do 19 pages worth of work? Right? This is where it gets serious. This is where it's my responsibility. When I'm sitting down with the newcomer, I have instructions in this chapter, right? What to do on my first meeting, what to do on the second meeting, right? Ultimately, I'm going to leave it friendly, right? At least he made a buddy. If he's not ready to do this right now, you know what? He knows somebody in the program. Whenever he's ready, guess what? He's going to come calling me. So let's go over here to, I have so many bookmarks in here. My book's falling apart. Let's see. All right. Forgive me. All right. So I'm going to take us all the way up to around page 92, and that's the important stuff that I'd like to talk about. So up until this point, it says, and I'm just going to paraphrase and hit some high notes. It says, perhaps you don't know anybody who wants to get sober. And what they were talking about, to put it in context, was, you know, let's say you're in the Midwest, something like that, you know what I mean, in middle America, and you just received a copy of this book. It came in the mail from the New York service office with a little postie on it that said, good luck. It's 1939, 1940, you know what I mean? It's like, what do I do? Perhaps I don't know anybody who's ready to get sober or wants to get sober. I reach out, right? I reach out to the people who are around me and in my community. It talks about doctors, priests, ministers, rabbis. A dentist? Sure, let him know. You know what I mean? Hey, I'm a recovered alcoholic. If you happen to know anybody who's suffering, hey, give them my number. You know what I mean? I let them know what's going on with me. Trust me, my doctors know. A lot of people in my life know. All my coworkers, they know what's going on with me, right? They know what happened. They see how I can be an effective member of society today. Anytime they come across somebody, guess who they're going to send them to? you're going to send them to me, right? So it says, when you discover a prospect of Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. So remember yesterday when we talked about how the old school AAs used to do it. I sit next to this dude, I find out all that I can about him, right? If I haven't met him yet, guess what? I'm going to get in contact with some of his friends, family, wife, sisters, brothers, cousins, dogs owners. You know what I mean? Like all sorts of people. I'm going to find out all I can about this guy so that I know exactly how to approach him. Okay? It says, if he doesn't want to stop drinking, don't waste your time to persuade him. Went on a 12-step call one time, walked in, you know, mom is like, oh, he's just drinking himself to death. Can you go in there and you can stop him and stuff like that? I just didn't say a word to her, went back in there, started talking to this guy. Do you really want to stop drinking? No. All right, cool. Walked out. Wait. What are you doing? He's not ready to stop. I'm not going to force him to. I can't force him to any more than she could, than anybody else could, than the judge could. You know what I mean? When he's ready, he's ready. Leave my card. Leave a book on the table, that kind of thing, with my number in it. When he's ready, he'll call. It says, you may spoil a later opportunity. Absolutely, right? It's like 567 or something like that in the third edition. One story mentions that there are two great sins. One is to get in the way of someone else's spiritual growth. The other is to get in the way of my own spiritual growth. Okay? And when I stop this person before he's hit his bottom, guess what? I'm getting in the way. I'm getting in the way of his spiritual growth. I'm getting in the way of that bottom. And I'm getting in the way of his connection to God, right? And perhaps he'll start his recovery based on a lie and not on the truth and the experience that he's had. And I can't get in the way of that, right? That leads us into the next thing, qualifying the alcoholic, right? The dreaded Q word. Oftentimes people, oh, you can't do that. Watch me, right? It tells me to, right? It is my obligation to do this. Why would I want to condemn anybody who is not a real alcoholic to sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for the rest of their lives? Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know what I mean? You'll experience some good coffee, some warm hugs, some really nice people, some cool people to hang out with, you know, for the most part. But why would I want to condemn them if they don't need to be here? You know, if they're potential alcoholics, you know what? Get a hobby. If you're a hard drinker, if you're a disco drunk, buy a dog. You know what I mean? A disco drunk. That's somebody who goes and burns it down on the weekends and then plays cool for the rest of the week. You know what I mean? And then does it again on the weekends. Probably not a real alcoholic, right? Just running into trouble. All right? So the most important piece that I want to touch on right here is on page 92, okay? So we're in the midst of this first meeting with the alcoholic, right? It's given us a bunch of different directions on what to do. It says at first, you know what? Ask him if he wants to quit for good and if he would go to any extreme to do so, right? Quit for good, not one silly day at a time. Are you ready to quit altogether for good and for all? Okay. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has what? Recovered, right? Past tense. How much hope would I give to somebody if I said, I just want to let you know I'm a recovering alcoholic? The only time they mention that word is when they were still in the process, and that's a little bit later in the family afterward, I believe, right? Someone who's in the midst of the process. They're going through the process. Every other time it mentions to use the word recovered, okay? That's how I introduce myself. So on this first meeting, it says, at first, engage in general conversation, right? We're just gonna get to know the guy. We're just gonna yuck it up a little bit. And at some point in time, the story is gonna, you know, lean towards some area of drinking, right? We might share some stories. And it says, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Show him the mental twist that leads to the first drink of a spree, okay? So what we're doing up to this point is we're just talking, right? He's sharing some more stories, I'm sharing some more stories, and if I see his head bobbing, he's doing this number, you know what I mean? I know I'm getting through to somebody. I know that it's somebody that I can relate to, okay? Now here comes the key factor. First real paragraph on 92. It says, if you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, I'll stop there. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, I need to be satisfied that he's the real deal. How do I do that? By asking the questions. Asking the appropriate questions found on page 44. Okay? The two simple questions. If I want to reorganize that into my own wording, super duper. Okay? Suffice the fact that I've asked them. Dude, so can you control how much you drink every single time? Well, no. Have you tried to quit for good or forever and you find that you can't? Well, you know, I need to know who I have in front of me. It's my responsibility to know who I have in front of me. Do I have a potential alcoholic, right? Someone who may have the physical piece, but is unsure whether they have lost the power to choose or not. The book talks about that in various places, right? Because if I have a potential alcoholic, I don't want to ruin a later opportunity. What I'm going to do is I'm going to lead him to the tests in the book. We've got two tests. One to decide whether you've lost control. Step over to the nearest bar room. Try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. Right? That's the first test. Second test, right? Whether or not they've lost the power to choose, let him try leaving liquor alone for a year. Set a goal. I'm going to try leaving liquor alone for a year. Right? Most of us, you try to commit to that test, guess what? A couple of weeks, I'm going to come calling, right? Funny story about, well, it's not funny, but it is a true story. A guy that I had recently, pulled him out of Homeward Bound. He was in detox. We were going to make a beginning. We were sitting down. We're talking about the work and stuff like that. He qualified for the physical piece, but he had never tried to quit for good. And I told him, dude, you need to try to quit for good. Okay? You have to do that. I have to do this in order to know full well what my predicament looks like. Right? And until that's done, this is a point that we can't get the other alcoholic into. We can't get them to this point. I can't push him further toward his bottom. Right? He has to experience that. He has to go through that first step one experience. In order for him to become malleable, in order for him to become desperate or even willing to accept drastic and revolutionary proposals, right? This is an experience that he has to have. And if that means me dropping him for him to go off and do that, guess what? He's got to do it. So I'm talking to this guy and, you know, he's like, well, I've never tried to quit for good. And I'm like, dude, you got to try it. You know what I mean? You just really have to try it because what we're doing, little sidebar, is we're setting the bar. This is what alcoholism is, right? Do you come up to the bar? The bar does not come down to you, okay? It is a one-size-fits-all in this regard, okay? This is what alcoholism is. Do you meet it? There's no special exceptions, right? It's two things, control and choice. Have you lost them, right? Anything else is inconsequential. Right? And not a prerequisite to being an alcoholic, okay? So I told this guy, I said, dude, you need to try the year test. And he's like, well, can I still go to meetings? And I'm like, yeah, dude, go ahead. You can go to meetings. He said, well, what happens if somebody corners me and asks me to, you know what I mean, if I need a sponsor or if I need to go through the work or something like that? And I said, you know what? If they're in the book, you tell them I'm doing the year test. He goes, okay, all right. So, you know, he went to meetings for a couple of weeks and I didn't hear from him. Week three rolls around and I get a ring on my phone and I'm like, ah, okay. Hey, dude, what's going on? Well, it's just started, well, silence. I'm not a good test taker. Yeah. Guess what? Now we got something to work with. Now he knows, right? And if I was to get in the way of that, I would have prevented that. I would have prevented the connection that he would have had. I would have prevented whoever he might have helped later on. That makes sense? So if you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, okay, it's important to understand who I have in front of me. Right? This is where singleness of purpose comes in. Okay? A lot of times, I'm a plain vanilla alcoholic, right? And if somebody else from another, who belongs in another fellowship, shows up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I will welcome them with open arms. You are welcome to study with me. You're welcome to be my brother and sister. If you're looking for help, we need to get you connected to someone who speaks your language. Right? This is where the life and death instance matters. Okay. Very first person I ever tried to sponsor was a dude we pulled out of Homeward Bound. He was a meth addict. And he asked me to sponsor him. And of course, I didn't know any better at the time. And it's like, yeah, dude, sure. And I called up JK and I'm like, JK, guess what, dude? I got my first guy. You know, we're going to do this, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I mean, he was talking about meth, but we would have been, and he's like, hold up, big boy. And I'm like, what? And he said, Jared, do you have any experience doing meth? I said, no, sir. He goes, who the hell do you think you are? It spells life and death. We are on a life and death errand. And me thinking that I know what that gentleman has gone through, me thinking that I could identify with him or he could identify with me as a plain vanilla alcoholic, is arrogant and selfish and dangerous, right? Oftentimes, and I'm not putting the blame on anybody, right? Oftentimes, drug addicts will find that they cannot find their solution in some of their respective fellowships, and so guess what? They may want that good AA sobriety, so they come and hide out in the rooms here, right? And I'm not saying hiding out in the rooms is a bad thing, right? Because we can make those other fellowships a little bit better, and I'll tell you how here in a second, right? It is my job to steer this person into the right direction. My phone is filled with men and women from Drug Addicts Anonymous, which is big in Dallas, right? We have Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous has their own program. They have their own workbook, right? I can't buy into that. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying I can't buy into it, but I know my brothers and sisters in Drug Addicts Anonymous come straight out of this book. They work the steps rapidly. They get recovered. I can vouch for that because that's an experience I've had. And so I pass these dudes along to anybody who can speak their language, right? Because it's that important. There's also a couple of things that we need to talk about in this regard too. Being an addict and being addicted are two different things. Two completely different things. It happens with alcohol and it happens with drugs, okay? Being addicted, past tense. I've met plenty of dudes who show up to me and they said, dude, I went on a drug run for like 6 years, but now it's alcohol that's kicking my ass. Okay, when was the last time you did drugs? Maybe like 4 years ago. Huh, okay, so you're telling me that you walked away from that, but booze is still eating your lunch. You were addicted, past tense, right? You had a physical dependence, which we can get with alcohol, right? If I get separated from that physical dependence, what am I left with? Do I have a mental obsession that takes me back to it, right? Or do I walk away from it, steer clear, never touch the stuff, right? These are important things to look at. And I don't want to give you an opinion on an experience I have not had. And when this guy approached me about, you know, sponsoring him when he was a meth addict, my sponsor told me, he said, look, dude, you call up our brothers in DAA and you talk to them. What does a first step experience look like for a drug addict? Far different than what it looks like for an alcoholic, right? A step one experience for a drug addict looks like a toe tag, okay? I cannot, in good faith, sit in front of a drug addict and administer the two tests in the book. Step over to your nearest drug dealer. Try some controlled using. Try to do it more than once. Try to do it and stop abruptly. No. Uh-uh. By the very nature of drugs, right, the next time he goes out there could be the last. And guess what? That's on my head. Because I was arrogant enough to think that I could help that dude. I hope this is making sense, and I hope that this rings true. I'm not singling anybody out, okay? I don't do that. But what I do want to do is bridge that division again, okay, between misinformation and the truth, okay? The truth is not always cool. The truth hurts sometimes, right? My sponsor told me in the very beginning, he said, Jared, I care about your well-being, and I care about your life. I could give a rat's ass about your feelings, right? And that was the truth. Right? And it's the same thing for anybody who has the laissez-faire approach to, oh, a drug is a drug is a drug. No, it is not. Right? Don't buy into that. Don't feed into that. Okay? And it's only because of piss poor sponsorship that we allow that to happen. Right? Thinking that I know and I can identify with someone when I have zero experience in that person's shoes. Don't believe me? Try to hear a fifth step from an alcoholic one day, then hear a fifth step from a crack addict the next day. Vastly different, right? The depth of remorse and guilt and shame that a drug addict experiences will far outweigh what any alcoholic will ever experience. Vastly different, right? Don't know one person who has sold their body for booze. But people will do it for drugs all the time, right? Where it's going to take you is vastly different, okay? What it does to my body is vastly different. The detox process is vastly different. I drive a Chevy pickup. If it breaks down, am I gonna take it to the Ford dealership to get worked on? A truck is a truck is a truck, right? No, I'm gonna take it to the experts, the people who know how to work on that. And that's when someone approaches me, guess what, dude? I understand what you're saying. I'm not gonna be able to take you through the steps, but guess what? I have some brothers in DAA who will help you. They speak your language. They will get you where you need to go. And I get more calls often than not of people saying, dude, thank you so much. I've been floundering in AA for years now. And you got me connected to these dudes in DAA and I'm free. Thank you. Right? That is how we can be helpful. People will get butt hurt. I'm going to tell you right now. People will get butt hurt. Oh, you just think you're too good? Because you're just an alcoholic? Well, you know, no, not at all. It's because I care for your life. I want you to get the help that you need, right? And I'm going to do that by introducing you over here. There, the instance may rise that you may not be so situated to be in a place where there is DAA or NA. You know what I mean? You may get these people who come into AA, and guess what? That's okay. If you've got to take them through the work in the meantime, until you can get them connected, right? Lack of power is our dilemma. We need to get to the power as fast as possible, get them to the power, and pass them on, right? Until you can get them connected. We got Zoom. We got tons of stuff all over the place. We've got resources to be able to get these people connected to those who speak their language, right? And this is why the qualification process is so absolutely important. I treat my alcoholism in AA. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. Okay? It's not for whites, blacks, gays, straights, any of that. It is for alcoholics. Anything else is inconsequential compared to that. Okay? It is for alcoholics. Right? You want to go someplace else to treat something else? Guess what? If a gambler came in here, would I try to treat, you know, his gambling addiction through the process of AA? Would any of us know how to do that unless you're an actual gambler? No. But yet we want to play ambivalence when it comes to drugs, right? What if it was sex? What if it was overeating, right? Overeating, something I cannot even fathom. You have to eat to live, but am I going to try to take them through the work when I have zero experience? No, absolutely not, right? If you are satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady, right? So now I'm gonna pile on heaps of evidence just like they did to Fred, right? Boom, 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 right? That there is no hope. We gotta spell disaster. And it says, it goes on to say, be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusions, okay? So as I did with the dude who did the year test, I showed him, this is what alcoholism is, okay? Do you meet the criteria? Right? The physical piece, yes. Sometimes you may have to bounce around the question, you know what I mean? Do you believe you have the power to choose whether or not you're gonna drink today? Have you had sufficient reason to stop and you find that you can't, right? Do you think that you can quit on a non-spiritual basis? Different ways to reword the same question, right? You may even choose your own words, right? Point is that they have to have both of those experiences, not just one. Let's not take the or on page 44 out of context, okay? It's an English, you know, 101 or whatever. It's joining both sentences, okay? Both ideas into one, okay? So continuing on, getting on to some not so doomy and gloomy stuff. We get on to some of the coolest stuff that we get to see. right? Some of the best stuff that we get to see. And that's seeing other people recover, right? Walking into a meeting, or, you know, walking up to the meeting and seeing, you know, John on his knees with another guy, and they're hugging it out, and they're doing the third step prayer, you know what I mean? And they stand up and they hug it. I'm getting chills right now just thinking about it. At our group, whenever we finish up, you know, we do Lord's Prayer or whatever, we don't say, keep coming back. We don't say, stay. We say, feel the power. And that's the God honest truth, right? Because that's what we're all about. We're all about feeling the power. The power runs through you. It runs through you. It runs through me. As long as I stay connected through the disciplines of 10 and 11, guess what? It's running through each and every one of us. And I've used this word several times throughout the past couple of days. Tangible, right? Tangible. It's real. I can touch it just like I can touch you, right? It's there. It's right in front of my own eyes. And if I can't see it, I'm not awake to it. I am spiritually asleep. But I can see it when I see you standing up from a third step, you know. I see it whenever I see, you know, two women, you know, separating for the night, and they're saying, yes, okay, I'm going to get to work on that fourth step, you know what I mean? Or walking out of a treatment center and seeing, you know, a couple of other people walking in to come 12 steps some other people, you know what I mean? Or carrying a message, something like that. It's there, right? And it's real. And this is what we have to shout from the rooftops, you know, is that there is a power out there. That power is God. That power is everything. I don't subscribe to the defeatist attitude that I'm always going to be powerless, right? That is not my experience, right? Always going to be powerless. Again, pick a new God, right? My God is everything. A lot of times, you know what I mean? Here's the thing. I'm not cured, right? This physical piece will be with me throughout my dying day until the day they throw dirt on me, right? The obsession has been removed, right? The freedom is there. I've been unshackled from the bondage of self, and we get an opportunity to share that with other people, right? I have a real purpose, okay? A real purpose. I have a primary purpose. I have a singleness of purpose. I have these things. I have a purpose. You know what I mean? There's nothing that can take that away. Just as there's nothing out there in the world that can remove your experience from you. Your experience is uniquely useful to each and every single person out there. Right? Some of the coolest things, though it sounds cliche, is that our lives have moved from a have to a get to. Right? Think about that. From a have to a get to. I get to be here and make new friends in Charlotte, North Carolina. Place that I would have never thought I would ever go. No, I mean, I'm not saying that as any offense, nor would had I ever thought that I would go to Aarhus, Denmark, right? Or Cannes, France, right? Or Caernarfon, Wales. These are places that I've been invited to, and I'm not saying that in a bragging fashion. I would have never in a million years thought that this boy from West Texas, right, would have ever ended up in a place like that. But because I have a primary purpose, a real purpose, and a singleness of purpose, God saw it fit that there was a message to carry there, right? God said, enough work here. I have other work for you elsewhere. And when the Spirit calls, that's where I go. And through the disciplines of 10 and 11, I remain open, right? I remain open. And this is something that we have to constantly be doing. In 6 and 7, if my roots have been pulled up and grasped new soil, right? Now I've got a plant. Picture like you got a brand new tree, okay? You got a pear tree. You get it home, the roots grasp new soil, you put it in, and what do I have to do? There's some dead stuff on it. I got to continue pruning it, but I got to continue doing that daily, and I do that through 10, right? I also have to feed and water it, and I do that through 11, through prayer, through meditation. Why? So that it can reach the sunlight of the Spirit and continue to grow. The book says that we cannot transmit something that we haven't got. True statement. But we will transmit what we do have. And if I'm not doing an effective 10, right, I throw prayer and meditation by the wayside. The moment I try to transmit something, I transmit sickness. Okay? I can transmit that. Okay? And do I want that for someone who is suffering just like I was? Because that's on my head, right? Those are my disciplines. Your recovery is your responsibility. It's nobody else's, right? So hopefully I'm doing an effective 10, right? By continuing to prune the tree. Hopefully through prayer and meditation, I stay connected to something that's closer to me than my own breath so that it reaches the sunlight of the Spirit so that eventually when somebody comes along, the fruit that this tree bears is good fruit. And then they can eat of that fruit and they can be free, right? Another way to spin that before I turn this over to John. Picture this, okay? I'm 43 years old. I have a 43-year-old bottle of water right here. Would anybody drink a 43-year-old bottle of water? It's been opened several times, okay? Someone may have drank a sip or two out of it, right? What's inside the bottle, right? It's a little murky. It's got some stank on it, right? Those are flies. You know what I mean? A hair or two hanging off of it. Everything in this is what I bring to the table, right? Dishonesty, selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking, restless, irritable, discontent, all of the stuff on page 52, depression, anxiety, untreated alcoholism, old ideas, misconceptions and perceptions of who I think I am, what I think God is, what I think you guys are, what I think relationships are, right? Old ideas that are killing me, and that's everything that is inside this bottle. It's what I bring to the table. And that's what I bring to the table every single day. Step 6 and 7 is the first step in living, right? Am I willing to be made new? Am I willing to be emptied out, pulled up root and branch to so that my roots can grasp new soil each and every single day, right? Is there anything wrong with the bottle? Anybody? No. The bottle can be emptied out, cleaned out, and be used again. This is me in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's what I bring to the table. And through the process of 4 through 9, I get emptied out, right? Cleaned out so that I can be filled up again, so that I can now fill you up, right? So that I can go out there and give freely of what was so freely given to me, right? Is all that making sense? That's where the power comes in, right? The book says that we have recovered and been given the power to help others, right? Better yet, another one of my favorite sentences. Let's go back here to, and I'm gonna pass it over here in a second. Page 124, okay, middle paragraph. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. Does that sound like powerlessness? No, that sounds like great power. Is that power mine? No, that power is God's, working in me and through me. Each and every single one of you has a voice, okay? Each and every single one of you has an experience. We could all be at the same place talking about the same exact thing and someone may only be able to hear it from her. Someone may only be able to hear it from him or from him or for her, right? Or maybe none of us, but the guy who comes in the next day, right? And that's why it's my job, my responsibility to suit up and show up and go carry the message, right? Carry a message of freedom, of hope, of the power of what God can do in our lives, right? That's my primary purpose. So I'm gonna turn it over to John. He's gonna pick up some more stuff about 12, and then, there's a lot of questions. I love it. What's that? Yeah, of course. We'll break for 10, so if you do have more questions, I'd get them in there. But thank you guys. I appreciate it.